Hello and welcome to the That's So Craven podcast, your Fulham podcast from Down Under. And once again, it's not Jack, it's me, Elton. I'm here to host tonight, and we're here to talk about today, wherever you are. We're here to talk about the Spurs game of the weekend, which is a late one. And I'm joined by Skibby. How are you, Skibby?
I'm very well, thanks, Elton. Welcome. Well, I'm happy to be back on, so and happy to be here and putting Wolves behind us. And I think it's, yeah, the wording is correct. Being spurred on, I'm feeling spurred on. I think we can put that behind us and push on now and look back towards Europe rather than mid-table mediocrity, I suppose.
I always like the expression when people say, we go again, we move on. And absolutely. So often after a loss, I'm not ready to move on. I'm miserable.
but it's not the Fulham way, but it's what I've been learning during my sort of time with Fulham. It's what I'm learning. It's just move on. It never happens. Yeah, Keep going.
Well, that's the wonders of mid-table magic. Dave, how are you today?
Much better. Yeah, I've recovered now from the Novavirus and... it was a bad weekend all round, really, wasn't it? It was Fulham had a bad day at the office. I had a bad day at the office, now it's all about just looking forward to the game on Saturday, the later kickoff as well. So, we haven't done a Saturday evening game in a while. So, I'm looking forward to it.
Well, let's just quickly recap last week's game, just for those who want a little bit more punishment. And for those who haven't listened in and have suddenly come out of I don't know where and realised it was a game last week. But, we went down our run of good form. And it has been a pretty good month for Fulham fans, to be quite honest with you. But our run of good form was interrupted last week with maybe not entirely unexpected, but somewhat frustrating result away at Wolves. As we discussed last week, if you analyze it, we were well and truly in the game, had some great chances, didn't take them, and then got punished and a bit unlucky as well with an own goal off Tom Kearney's backside, and then a consolation goal in the very, very dying minutes of the game. Can I ask you guys, obviously there was no significant change in our fortunes, you know, wins and losses didn't really go against us. We remain 12th in the table, which is, sort of position aside, it looks like we're safe, looks like we're in a decent position for given our run in. But how do you think this has kind of affected our momentum and how does that look for the way forward for us? Dave, what do you think?
Yeah, it was because we had those chances in the first half. On another day, we scored one or two goals and could have been in a good position to win that game. I don't think like the wheels have come off our momentum and our form, really. I just think we had a bad day out where we didn't take our chances and Wolves did very efficient with theirs, and so I don't think it was gonna I don't think now it would have taken too much confidence away from the guys, and I think they'll just be looking to do a lot of the things we did well, which was the, you know, create chances, build up play, dominate the first half, and just try and again is getting a grip with these mistakes that we keep making that costing us goals. So I think that'll be the focus this weekend, because Spurs in particular will punish us on any kind of mistakes at the back we make. And we're going to have to be really, you know, tight to keep them out. They score a lot of goals. And if we're not on our game, we can concede goals. So it's just about making sure we limit those mistakes, I think. But generally, I don't think it would have particularly knocked our momentum or off us on our run, because I didn't think the performance was that bad. It just didn't go for us, would be my take.
Skibby, do you think Marco would be that philosophical about the weekend's performance and the result? Or do you think if there were a couple of takeaways and things that he would insist the team work on from last week to this week, where do you think he would focus?
I think for Marco, he would have taken the team in and said, you know what, we were punished and we were the sort of villains of our own downfall, really, because we didn't put the game to bed. We missed certain chances in a game which we seem to sort of control, and we seem to really should have come away with 3 points. I think for Marco to be able to, I think he's going to be taking this team aside and saying, that's what happens when you don't put it to bed. I think, but what he's got to, and I think what he is aware of is something we touched upon in the last one, which is the fragile mentality of a few of our players. I think he's got to be careful in terms of keeping that confidence high and keeping that momentum and just sort of hammer home why we lost, but also pick yourselves up when we go again. And I think that the key point for the from the Wolves game to the, now the Spurs game, is it's going to be a completely different game, as Dave sort of touched upon. It's Wolves had a lot of injuries, had a lot of missing players. We were expected to go there full strength and, you know, dictate that game. Whereas now Spurs coming to the Cottage is going to be a completely different mindset of, we're not going to have a lot of the ball, but we're going to have to try and suffocate Spurs and use that counter-attack. And I think that's what they'll focus on. That was the weekend just gone, completely different game. We now move on. We go with the Spurs in a game at home, especially where we've got quite a good record where we can win. I think that's what he's going to take.
Yeah, we've got a good record. Not so much against Spurs. Funny enough, I'm sure we'll get to this, but I had a little look back before we logged in. And have we lost Elton? I think we have.
No, I'm back.
You're back. Sorry. I had a little look at this before we logged in. We haven't beaten Spurs at home since 15th of November 2008. So, we had definitely have lost Elton now. So it's been... it's been some time. That's 10 games at home. We've lost the last 8 of those, all fairly tight in terms of the scoreline, but they just clearly had the better of us at Craven Cottage for a long period of time. And, you know, we've got to get this hoodoo off our backs, you know, all
you
of
know,
my Spurs fans. So I can't take it anymore.
You know, analytically, if you're a mid-table club, and, you know, with all realism, that's kind of where the ceiling, the glass ceiling is. What it means is you're going to lose as many games as you win, and it's going to be a disappointing roller coaster from time to time. So mentally, surely one has to prepare for that. And as a manager and a guy who's got a bit of grey hair, you'd think Marco would be well and truly on top of that. But it must be so incredibly difficult playing at this level of intensity in that bubble, expectations really high around, and then you go and beat Arsenal, you go and beat Man United away, you know you can do it, and then you come up against, you know, sides who are, you would regard as your peers, and you lose, you know, 2-1, where it must be pretty tough, really. And I know they do it week in, week out, but actually, mentally, it must be pretty tough. It's got to be.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I think it's great taking those points and the, sort of the bigger scalps, as you mentioned. But if you can't do it against the teams around you, you're just going to kind of be stuck in that limbo, which we seem to be at this moment. But, yeah. I mean, we faced Spurs, didn't we, in the Cup earlier in the season? Mm. Yeah, fair enough. It was quite early on for Postecoglou and team that, you know, they were still getting to, well, finding the best 11, still finding how to score without Kane, things like that. There was a lot of factors, and we came away winners on penalties. I feel like it's going to be a completely different game to that to that one, but we'll see.
Sure. Well, let's turn our attention to Saturday, and it's a late one, which probably means that you guys just get a couple more hours in the pub, because of course you're told. Or your partners, it's an early kickoff. That's what we always do with the cricket. Even though the cricket gets rained off, but you still come home at 8 o'clock. so for the people in the Southern Hemisphere, out in Australia at least, we have the joy of a 1:30 a.m. Western Standard Time kickoff. And for the hardened folk in the east coast of Australia, it's a 4:30 a.m. kickoff. 5:30 p.m. kickoff in England, and for our folks and friends in the U.S., it's a 9:30 a.m. Pacific Standard Time kickoff and 12:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time kickoff. Those are pretty pleasant fixture times. So let's just have a look at Spurs' recent form, which I think is interesting. Obviously, they're doing very, very well. What are they, fourth, fifth at the moment? They had a very, very good result away against Villa last week, albeit that there was a red card. But I think the red card came at about the 65th minute. It certainly wasn't early doors. And they were looking pretty hot even before that incident. And they went on to score four, which is quite impressive against Villa. I know you can't judge these things too analytically, because 10 men down at that level is a ridiculous disadvantage. They won 3-1 v Palace, got beaten 2-1 by Wolves at home. I think that's a red flag. They had a win against Brighton 2-1. And a draw against Everton, which I think is another interesting result, albeit away. Any comments there, guys?
I was going to add that, I mean, three wins out of five, it looks good on paper, right? But when you start to sort of break down those results, so the draw at Everton, 2-1 win home to Brighton, and then coming into the sort of loss against Wolves, they're not convincing results against opposition, which we've seen quite recently against Fulham. So Brighton being one where we came away 3-0 win, 3-0 winners quite comfortably. I think Everton have faltered quite a lot. They're definitely a team that are sort of low on confidence. So I think it's not convincing enough for me. And if I was to speak to my Spurs fans or who are friends of mine, they're probably saying, oh yeah, but they're such Spurs results. You know, they're sort of just grinding out these results, not convincingly, but they're getting the 3 points. And I think that probably is fitting the bill for Spurs this season. Villa, yeah, like you say, there was a red card, but they were all over them. But then I would also say on the other hand, you know, Villa came to the Cottage rather recently. Mm. And for a team that are now in the top four, I wasn't really that convinced by them. I think on a day where, you know, Son, Kulusevski and co are actually really firing, then that result doesn't surprise me too much. So it's really hard to sort of read into in the form of what kind of Spurs you're going to get coming to the Cottage. But is it one that we should be completely fearful of, or, you know, think we could be steamrolled? I don't think so. But that's kind of my optimism at the moment, I suppose.
Dave, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, well, there's a lot of pressure on them because they're now firmly back in the race for the top four. In fact, if they win their game in hand, they go above Villa now, don't they? They'll take the fourth spot. So this is a huge game for them. And I think their three games after this are all against City, Liverpool and Arsenal, I think. They've got a really hard run. So they'll definitely need to get points on the board from their perspective this weekend to help them through that really tough period and keep themselves there or thereabouts. So they're going to really go for this. They're going to be bang up for it and see it as a huge game. So that's just one thing to bear in mind. And it will mean that they will come after us. You know, they'll look to win the game. They're not coming for a draw. They're coming for 3 points, which, you know, as we've seen from Spurs this year, that tends to be how they play every game. So, we've got a big test, but they've got a few key people out as well, don't they? I'm sure we'll get into it, but you know, and we seem to have nearly a fully fit squad now. It's a really good test for us, given where we are with our squads, where we are with our kind of, you know, safety, you know, long shot at Europe, but generally kind of stable mid-table. It's a really good test for us now, and to see, you know, how we can perform against a team that's really competing for the Champions League. So,
One of the criticisms levelled at Fulham very regularly is that, you know, obviously we're not really getting many results against the teams above us, and certainly not against the top six, although we have done better than usual this season. One of the problems is that we tend to lose to teams below us in the table, teams that we absolutely should be getting no worse than a draw from on paper and on form. And if you look at this recent form, it's kind of what's happening to Spurs here. I don't think I'm looking too deeply, but, you know, both Wolves and Everton are really quite a long way below Spurs. Am I looking too deeply, or is there something? What is it about this Spurs team that causes them to end up in these situations? Do you think is it Postecoglou's aggressive brand of football that means just from time to time you are going to extend yourself and leave yourself vulnerable?
Yeah,
I think so. I think there's a little bit of that, and I think there's been a little bit of injuries as well. They don't have, you know, when they've got two, three players out, Spurs, they don't quite look the same side. I think it was against Wolves, they had both fullbacks out that day, and Doggy and Porro were both out, and they just lost all their width and in an attacking sense, and looked vulnerable every time Wolves went forward. So I think injuries have been a part of it. And, you know, it's not just been those two. They've had, you know, people like Mickey van der Ven out for long periods this season, James Maddison. So they've had to constantly shuffle. And Son as well, of course. He's obviously back now, but he was out for a while. I think you're right. I think it's partly the brand of football that leaves them a little bit vulnerable. But also I think they've had quite a lot of injuries that have disrupted their momentum.
Yeah. Digging in a little deeper and maybe wishful thinking and try to find an angle for why we've got an opportunity here. But digging in a little bit deeper and looking at Spurs away form over the last five, we see two wins, two draws and one loss. And is there anything in here that suggests, you know, we have a slightly better chance, and that this Spurs team doesn't actually travel too well? Or am I just being too hopeful?
Well, they've scored a lot of goals that period. That's the first thing that stands out.
Don't worry about that, Dave. Don't worry about that.
But they've also conceded a lot, haven't they? Is that six goals in the last five? Big loss to Brighton there. And I think that's the thing, we spoke about this season how important the first goal's been in Fulham games. This screams another occasion like that, where, you know, if we can get the first goal and get on the front foot and keep driving forward and be very brave, I think that there's an opportunity for us. And particularly with another couple of injuries from Spurs as well, that, you know, ahead of this game, we can take advantage of. But I think on the flip side, they do score goals, and we may need more than one on Saturday to get the 3 points.
Oh, I totally agree. It's inconceivable that you could nick one and keep them out in my head. Let's look at the inverse. Oh, sorry, I jumped forward there. I think I jumped too far forward there. But look at, I thought I had a slide there of our home form. But what I do know is that Fulham have won the last six out of the last 10 at home. So our form is decent at home. It's not, it's by no means, a fortress, but we're difficult at home. And I think they wouldn't be underestimating the job at hand. We can be quite difficult at home. We can frustrate teams. And one thing that I think we do pose a threat is that we're getting better and better and more dangerous on the counter-attack. And with Spurs' high line, that's going to make for some interest, which, kind of leads into the conversation of how we might set up on the weekend. What are you guys thinking? And we know we talk about this all the time, but we know that Marco loves to stick with his winning side. Well, he doesn't have one of those as of last week. He kept Polinia back and not so much punished him for his two-match ban, but I think he rewarded Reed and Lukic, who've done very well. I think for me, I know Sasa Lukic was involved in that first almost goal where Wilson missed the opportunity, but it was a beautiful bit of creative play, that back heel to set up, you know, that build up. But personally, and I've seen mixed comments over Twitter on this, because some people, perhaps they're fans who are very keen for Lukic to make his mark and show us what he can do. For me, he was soft last week. Not terrible by any means, but he certainly wasn't the player that he was in the two prior weeks. Does he hold his position against Spurs, or does Polinia cast too long a shadow? And does he make it back in the side as in the starting lineup?
For me, he has to be dropped, I think. I like Lukic. I think when he has a lot of time on the ball and can read the game, he's like most foreign players, which, you know, come to the Premier League. But I think with Bissouma and Sarr are going to be very intense. And I think Polinia really does fit the bill, has to be involved. And I think for me, Lukic would just require too much time and not be on sort of the pace that we need to sort of close down Spurs. So I think he would have to sort of be dropped for Polinia. So I think for me, it would be a double pivot of Reed and Polinia, just for that tenacity and that intensity that is going to be sort of thrown at us. I think Kearney would be that sort of luxury player that we'd bring in if we do find ourselves in a winning position or a drawing position. But yeah, it's going to be tough in terms of from a tactically point from Silva, that they love to throw their fullbacks forward, and Doge and Porro, very, very attacking. Kulusevski and I think Brennan Johnson was used in the last last game. So it's just going to be a lot of pace, a lot of basically attacking intent, and they're just going to be all over Fulham. I think that's going to be where we just need to be able to contain them, and I think Polinia and Reed fit the bill there to really sort of shore up that midfield.
Dave, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, you said it there. I think we're not coming into this game off a win. So Marco now can really, and I think he will, play his best side. I think we're going to see what Marco thinks his best side is on Saturday, particularly given what a big game it is for Spurs and how important it is for them. It's also a great opportunity with everyone fit and with kind of no real jeopardy of relegation hanging over us at the moment, for Marco to kind of put his best 11 out, see how they perform, and see really it helps him work through his plans for next season in a way, to see if they perform, what level, where do we need to improve, etc. So I think we'll see his best team. And for that, my suspicion behind that is that Lukic and Reed will both drop out and he'll go back to Kearney and Polina. I totally get the logic in keeping Reed in, given the, you know, the qualities that Tottenham have. But I think, you know, given the last couple of months, the partnership that seems to have featured the most has been Kearney and Polina. And that partnership's done really well. I would argue it's our best partnership in out of the four. And I think Kearney will get the nod, but, you know, I see the logic for Reed. It's just a bit of a coin toss, that one, for me. In terms of going forward, I think this is where it gets a bit interesting. You know, we've seen Andreas come off the last couple of games because we've got a lot of attacking options on the bench. He's been given a bit of a rest. But I don't think there's any doubt that Silva sees him in our best 11. So I think Andreas will keep his place. I do think Willian will come back in on the left at the expense of Harry Wilson, and Iwobi will probably move to the right. Other than that, I don't see any other changes. There's arguments all over the place. You could argue that Brozier deserves a chance. There's arguments that you could stick Kenny Tete in for a game in this one. But I just think, as I said, Silva will play his best team, given all that everyone's available, to just kind of see how we can do with our best side against a team really pushing for top four. And that's just how I see it. Yeah.
It's interesting. We talk about Polina a lot, and obviously we talk about the possibility of him being recruited and sold in the summer. And we think about who he might be suited to, and you know what the real chances are at that these worlds converge and we get the price we're asking for and the right sort of teams come along who need a Polina for what he really is. And then you think about what he represents to Fulham. And even though he's missed 10 yellow cards, maybe 15, he's Mr. Uber exuberant sometimes. And as Sam, I think quite insightfully said last week, you know, it's he needs to kind of learn to just calm it down and know when to turn it on in his game rather than just be that attack dog all the time. And it's a sort of self-discipline that you hope evolves in his game. But one thing that he does do for us, particularly against very, very good sides who hold the ball, is he breaks up play like no other with his tackling, with his intensity, with just the way he gets around the ground and he terrifies the shit out of oppositions. And not least that you think he might get injured. You know, there is that element to him. And so to me, when you're playing a side like Spurs, who are not different to someone like City, who are so technically brilliant and at another level, Spurs are this attacking side who obviously pass the ball around really well and they've got, you know, very, very good players and they are a good machine. But you throw Polina into the middle of that and you disrupt the likes of Madison, who you know, it almost reminds me a bit of Beckham Madison, the way he skips over things. He doesn't really like getting involved in the cut and thrust. And I'd say someone like Polina actually represents a pretty tough opposition to that kind of midfield. Because he's roughhouse. He's not quite shithousery, but he's roughhouse. And sometimes when, even in a game, when you're just not able to prevail with quality, intensity can do an awful lot to undo an opposition. And that's kind of what he represents. So for me, I just can't see a world where he doesn't start, not at all.
Yeah, I saw the comment there that Jack says that it has to be Zhao and Kearney, absolutely. But I disagree. I think Reed, he may not be the best on the ball, but I think he's just relentless with his energy and his work rate. That if it's not Polina that's roughing up Madison, like you say, which would be very key, just as long as he's not having a good game and be able to pick out the passes, which he likes to do, just if he's able to skip past Zhao for any reason, then at least sort of Reed or someone is there just sort of nipping it in his heels and just being there to disrupt the play, I think would be a key thing that I don't think Kearney really offers. I think Kearney's great to have as a person who can make something happen, sort of break up play, but in a different way that he holds onto the ball and sort of calms everything down. But I think the fact, if we're going to be always chasing the ball, then Kearney's not necessarily the best person for that. In the squad, and I think that's why Reed for me would pip him. But yeah, but like you say, it's key just to really keep at them and just disrupt their sort of calm passing play, which, you know, is the kind of Postecoglou ball, I suppose.
I hear that argument for Reed, and you know, there's no doubt that he's tenacious and provides that bit of extra cover in midfield. I guess I just feel that Marco is going to want to be brave in this game and you know, try and, you know, Kearney's clearly the more creative of the two. And actually, if you look back, Kearney's played in a lot of the, you know, our best performances at home this season. So if you look at the Arsenal game, he started that game. And he was excellent. In fact, that game, he had a great game. And of course, we know the result. You go back to the 2-5 nils we had. Kearney had just got back into the team, was playing fantastically well. And that's why I think he's probably in Marco's head, you know, the number one partnership alongside Pelina. And given that I think he knows that we're going to need to score goals in this game to get a result, I think that's what will edge it. But and again, if you think back again to some of the games where Reed's played with Pelina this season at home, one that sticks out to me is the Chelsea game, where I thought Reed, you know, was brought in for that very reason and didn't have a very good game. In fact, he was chasing shadows a lot in that first half. If I remember right, he came off quite soon into the second just because it just wasn't working. So that's just my feeling. I think he'll go with Kearney, but I totally understand the logic behind the Reed move. I just, I guess it's just a sense more than anything else that, you know, Marco will want to be brave and control the game a bit more. So that's why Kearney gets the nod.
I think that's pretty good insight, actually. I think it does come down to whether you want to take a more defensive, maybe anxious view of how hard they're going to come at you and just how many big guns you're going to need to break up things. And maybe because Reed and Pelina, when they're playing well, they are a very good pairing, because, you know, Pelina goes in, breaks it up, Reed's there to pick up the ball and move things along. But another thing we discussed last time was how we've got, if you could have the left foot of Tom Kearney and the right foot of Pelina, you'd have some sort of incredible player in midfield, wouldn't you? And if you had Alex Wobey's high energy together with Pereira's right foot, you'd have that £100 million, you know, attacking midfielder. And we just don't have that. So, you know, as a manager, he's got to try and predict how effective Pelini is going to be and whether Harrison Reed can do a job and actually bring the wingers into the game or put those balls through to link to Pereira or indeed even further upfield. Or do you, as you say, Dave, do you take a very brave view that Pelini is actually going to win those balls, get Kearney involved, and he's going to start building attacks? And I don't think you can afford to be too defensive here. We're not looking for a draw. It's not about that. What's the point? There's no point trying to scavenge, you know, half a dozen draws before the end of the season. We're here to achieve the best we can. And Marco would want to beat Spurs, no doubt about it. I've made my views pretty loud and clear about Willian. Not only do I love the man, but I think our best returns from Willian are always when he starts. And he shapes the game for us. And if he's going to have a good game, we're going to have a great game. But he really seems to struggle to do that when he's just got 15 minutes to play. You know, where's Harry Wilson's head after last week? Every time I think he's overcome that, he's hit some form and he's really going to start to do it now. Things like last week happen, and I kind of worry what that means for him. It was interesting, you know, we talked about it offline during the week, and if you look again at that opportunity against Wolves that he had to score, Saar does actually quite brilliantly. He actually reads it perfectly. He comes out to the box. He's got a split second to make a decision. He stops short of the line, so he's got the option to use his hands. And Harry Wilson's obviously running to meet the ball. He's got a split second, but that is the amount of time an elite athlete has to make a decision and to back himself. And no shade on the guy at all. I couldn't do any better. But you know, it's that bravery, isn't it? It's the bravery. It's the no fear of losing. If you try something that instinctively you know you should do. I wonder how that's going to affect him. I really hope it doesn't. We need a really confident Harry Wilson. Fulham Football Club needs a confident Harry Wilson, because on his day, he's as good as any. Really is.
Yeah, he's been quite frustrating this season. Just that whenever he's got a run in the team, he's had a, you know, he hasn't been able to maintain a consistency in his performance. And that's why I think, you know, just given, I wasn't saying he was terrible last week, but he certainly didn't have the same impact that he'd had the week before at Brighton. And as you say, was guilty of missing a chance with that was, you know, a really good chance. Let's be honest, where we really should have been one ahead. And the other thing that Marco knows about Harry Wilson is that he's really good off the bench.
Exactly.
Season. And that's a really good option. And he's much better off the bench, as, you know, than as you say, Willian is. So I think that's just a kind of no brainer, really, that change will happen. And given that we know Wobi's quite comfortable either side, it's no problem moving him over to the right to bring Willian in. Just feels like that's what's, you know, likely to happen at the weekend. And I've no doubt Wilson will come on with a lot of energy. And I'm sure he'll put in a good shift. But I think you've called it right. I think Willian's got to start, and Harry really needs to find some consistency if he wants to hold a place in the first 11.
I guess a question for you then, Dave. You think that Wilson would come off the bench in this scenario?
Mm.
In a game where we're looking to contain Spurs and basically look on the counter-attack, for me, Adama would be probably a better choice than Wilson. I think Wilson is very much that kind of luxury player. Loves time on the ball, loves, you know, to be able to sort of pick his spot, cutting in onto the left. Whereas I think Adama is just so direct that we see in these sort of games. Would you not see him as a better option off the bench to sort of come on situation?
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I think the impact that Adama's been having on games off the bench recently has been fantastic. And just, you know, he's got more attributes and able to stretch the Tottenham defence later in the game. I think he's clearly going to be an option. I think we've got lots, don't we? Which is really nice. It's very rare that we have so many options. But I could see Adama coming on most certainly, regardless of the situation. I think Curry will get a run as well. And then we'll probably see Breuer too. So good thing is we can make up to 5 subs, can't we? So there's plenty of options there. I just feel that I will see them both at some point. You're right. Obama's the one that Adama. Adama will be the one that I think would make more impact and feels like will certainly be the game changer, I would expect.
I'm glad you mentioned Traore, because I actually think in my mind, you know, this Spurs team are going to really come at us with a huge amount of confidence, thinking, not disrespecting us, but they are on a pretty good roll, despite me trying to pick holes in their form. They're in pretty good form at the moment. And I you know, they're going to come at us. And I just think Traore could be really, really interesting if we play to his strengths. That could be very, very exciting, because not only is he a good sprinter and runner, I mean, so was Dan James, right? But he's actually shown that there's a bit more to this player. And as I said last week, whoever knew that he had a rocket of a left foot? I mean, that was quite a shot. And, you know, it's again, incredible what a bit of confidence does, because he's got to be believing in himself right now. And I'm sure all the team are getting around him and pumping him up and are keen for him to do really well. So, is there any chance that Mooney's doesn't start in your heads?
No, he's got to be there.
I agree. I just can't see, just given his recent form and how he's linked play for us in the last month or so. It's not just been the goals. I think it's just been the all-round play. I don't think Silva will push the button just yet. I think if he goes a few games without scoring, we might see Breuer get a chance. But I don't see that happening this weekend. But, you know, he'll probably feature too. You know, we spoke about Wilson and Traore off the bench. I could most certainly see a situation, lots of situations where Breuer will come off the bench. And Marco tried him up front with Munez at the end of the Wolves game to try and get a goal. So that's an interesting dynamic. Yeah, I look forward to seeing a bit more of him, but I just don't think quite yet. Yeah, I think Marco will stick with Mr. Money Munez.
We've seen he's quite an emotional player as well. Like, you know, he came brought to tears with his goal against Burnley. So I think if he was to drop him now, especially after sort of, you know, I think it's six goal involvements in six games, I think is the new stat. It keeps changing. But I think if you were to drop him now, it would shatter his confidence. And I don't think Marco's that kind of manager. I think the way that he's nurtured Muniz into sort of the starting lineup this season, I think is a credit to him and a credit to the work that they've been doing on the training ground. So I think, yes, Broya's there. He's ready. And I love that. But I think just not yet. I think Muniz still deserves that chance to at least a couple of runs out just to try and cement that position rather than we start looking at alternatives.
Yeah.
Poor old Marco. He's the manager of fragile Fulham, isn't he?
Absolutely.
one thing, I don't really know Broja that well. I haven't followed his journey at Chelsea in any way, shape or form. My sense is that I don't think he's really that well suited to coming off the bench. Doesn't seem to enjoy it. He looks like a player who would prefer to build into the game. Does anyone get that sense, or is it just me?
No, I definitely get that sense.
Who wants to come off the bench, right?
Well, it's a good mentality to have, I suppose. But I think it's also his play style as well that it's quite tough for him to sort of come off the bench and replace a number nine who loves to sort of rough and tumble with the center backs and really get stuck in and just really sort of scrapping for the ball. Basically, that is basically what Muniz is doing. He, for Chelsea, from what I've seen, and Southampton, from what I saw, he was a striker who was relatively quick, who loved to sort of be on the outside wings and sort of looking to get running in behind, which is not necessarily the best or the way that we're playing currently, or I can't really think of ever really, considering Mitrovic wasn't the quickest. But it is quite a tough ask for him to come off the bench and replace a person who's sort of fighting for the ball, whereas he's sort of come from a team with Chelsea where, you know, he's always on the ball looking to get in behind and have those players such as like Enzo Fernandez and that who were able to sort of pick him out. I think he does offer that different dynamic, though, which I do like. So coming off the bench, and I'm trying to think of the game now, but he came off the bench and he was much wider, taking the ball to the corner, seeing the game out. And I think I liked that about him. And that was a really good option to bring on. I think it's tough.
Yeah, it's an interesting point about his game style. He's obviously, he does look pretty quick, actually. And he obviously does like to make those runs, get in behind. But we don't seem to be that good. And I think we've just never learned to play in that kind of style. And to that point, I don't think we're that good at playing Traore in and behind either. You know, many times when he's come on, he's sort of begging for them to actually, you know, put him in behind, but we don't do it. I mean, you could actually do it in a very, very simplistic way with Traore. He's that bloody quick. He doesn't have to be that smart a play. You just put the ball in, put it into the corner and, you know, say go. Back on Broya, is it not also this weekend that marks the trigger point or the threshold where if he does not start, we're up for his full £4 million fee. Is that right? Well,
reportedly, that is the case. And, you know, look, you spoke about, you know, does he enjoy coming off the bench? I think he thought he was coming here to play and start, yeah. You know. And I think that...
From all accounts, he was, Dave.
He was.
We were in trouble.
It's just been remarkable, really, that literally the first game after he signed, you know, that's when Muniz really started to shine and really just held on to his place ever since. So, I'm glad that we haven't just to avoid paying £4 million, stuck him in to kind of stunt Muniz's development and let him continue this momentum, because reality is, you know, Muniz's value must have increased significantly over the last month or so, given the fact he's now scored 5 Premier League goals. You know, he's a 22-year-old Brazilian player. And I think, you know, he's obviously the player that's signed to a long contract at Fulham. If he continues this form, could, you know, he might end up being our long-term number 9. So I think if we have to end up paying £4 million, but have in the meantime have uncovered our long-term number 9 and dramatically increased the value of that player, then I don't think it's, you know, I think they offset each other and we come out on the right side of it personally.
Do you think Raul, who is apparently now fit, does he make the bench? Is he required when we've got Broya, who can't even get the minutes he needs and wants? Is there any opportunity or need for Raul at all?
The only thing I can really say to fight his corner is that he's worked with the team a lot longer. He knows Marco's sort of vision and the way in which we play. And we started to see those kind of rewards before we got injured. He had a very stuttery start. He started to score goals. And I think that's the only kind of leg up, is behind closed doors in the training ground, is Raul more tactically aware of the way we play rather than Broya? And that's the only thing I can see that will give him that sort of that heads up over Broya. But I think Marco, given the sort of the man that he is, the way that he speaks, the way that, you know, we know him, he doesn't care about finances. He's here to coach a football team. He's here to win games. So he won't care about this 5 million or 4 million or whatever it is hanging over Broya. He will pick the team which he sees best. And personally, if it is going the way which I think it is in terms of understanding tactically Marco's vision, then I can see Raul coming in over Broya for sure.
Yeah.
I think Raul might have to wait. I don't think we'll put 2 strikers on the bench. It would just mean taking out a winger most likely. Given the fact that all of our wingers and attacking midfielders are performing to a fairly good level at the moment, I just don't foresee Marco doing that. It feels like a bit of a wasted bench spot to have 2 strikers. Broya, I think, offers... He's got slightly different attributes to Raul. You mentioned he's quicker, and I think that can be more of an asset off the bench, personally. So for me, I think Raul might have to just wait his time for an opportunity. And I'm sure it will come sooner rather than later, but because it's, you know, players get injured, players get suspended, players drop in form. But if he's fit this weekend, I don't foresee him coming in just for that very reason.
I tend to agree. I mean, it's a crazy luxury. Not that all of these guys are in screamingly wonderful form, but they all are, you know, they are elite players who can do a job for you. And it's amazing that we've actually got 3 people that we're discussing who could potentially do a job for us. But I do agree with you that I don't think he'd forego the flexibility of having winger type options on the bench when they're more likely to be needed based on where we are in the game. So, guys, we've talked a lot. We've been pretty optimistic about how we're going to do on the weekend. It's time for you to tell me how I should bet on the weekend and what the scoreline's going to be. Skibby?
It's a tough one because where I live, there's a lot of Spurs fans. So I'd love to say 5-0 Fulham. We can do that 3 times in a season, right? realistically, I think it's going to be a high scoring game. And I think it will be a 2-2 draw. Ooh. And if you wanted sort of betting, I would say that Son goal or assist is guaranteed. So I think, but yeah, I think if we can, they'll get through, they score goals, but I think they're going to be vulnerable on the counter-attack, which we've shown that we can do this season. So I think 2-2 is probably the way I'd go.
Dave?
Yeah, I agree with Skibby. I think it's going to be a high-scoring game. I just can't feel optimistic about Spurs games, just given our recent history against them. And also, as I say, all the in-laws are Spurs fans. And, I've just been in agony for the last 15 years since we last beat them or however long it's been. So I don't feel particularly optimistic that we'll come away with 3 points. But I do think, a high scoring draw, is possibly the way to go here. To, as Skibby's said there, that they'll find a way of getting a goal, and but we are equally good on the counter attack. I think he summed it up really well there, and I kind of feel pretty similar that draw's probably the right bet. And I like the shout about Son, because he does seem to always get on the end of a goal or assist. So it's a good, that's a good shout for the for you and the viewers.
Truth be told, I'm not really a betting man. I just happen to have a bit of hot form at the moment. But I do actually quite. I actually forget to put a bet on. That's how crap I am at it. I actually think my recommendation for an absolutely safe bet is João Palhinha to commit two or more fouls in the game.
Guard.
Yeah. Well, I mean that's a little bit more difficult to call, but. I was putting down Harrison Reed in Jao's absence. Harrison Reed to commit 2 fouls. He did it almost before halftime every game. It's almost guaranteed. What do I think? I want to stay optimistic here. You guys are being a little bit hedgy. Not that you're being anything other than completely realistic, but I don't feel we can keep them out. I think there's way too much skill and firepower there. They're for sure and certain going to score a goal. Leno's going to have a blinder. He's going to be talked about all next week, and he's going to stop some amazing attempts on goal. But they will get one through. And I think we actually Adama Traore scores a second goal for Fulham to win 2-1. I can't give you the minute, but. And I want a text for both of you when it happens. Okay.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So yeah, I'm going to call it. I'm going to call it optimistically 2-1 because we're going to score first, and that is a different dimension for Fulham. If we can score first, I think that makes it for an interesting game.
Agreed.
And we'll score first before halftime. I don't know why I'm talking so positively, like I actually know what's going to happen. But anyway, it's just what I...
No, I like it. You're gearing me up for the game,
I'm actually excited for it now.
Yeah.
I just feel like if I can share that with a few hundred listeners, we might all actually enjoy the next 48 hours.
Yeah, great.
But thinking about Saturday, we've got a pretty late night ahead of us. So I'm not quite sure whether to go to bed early or just have a skin full of drinks in the afternoon, have a kip anyway, and or just go the long haul and trawl my way through to 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning. That's what it'll be. But nevertheless, this is why we This is why we love being international fans. Something you guys would not understand.
Yeah. Not fully, no.
No.
Yeah. Anyway, no. Guys, I'm watching the clock here, and I want to beat my family at actually making this under 1 hour, which will be a record for probably about 40 podcasts for That's So Craven. And it's something also that I've noticed happening tonight is that people have been speaking without being interrupting. And my youngest son is probably sleeping right now, but will no doubt listen to this in the morning. He should take note. So without any more sledging, I think we'll leave it at that and kind of wrap this up. And I'm thank you so much, Skibby and Dave, for joining me tonight. And I've really enjoyed the chat, and I'm really, really looking forward to the weekend, because I actually truly think we could actually pull off a surprise. And, you know, we are the team that doesn't do well against top four, top six, but we've already beaten Arsenal this year, so why not?
Yeah.
And I think, you know, for the sake of Dave and his in-laws, just so you can have an absolutely great weekend, we need to pull this off. So, listen, guys, without any further ado, thanks again for joining us, and come on, you Whites.
Yeah, come on, you Whites.
Come on, you Whites.